Broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, it's time for Point Taken. Here are your hosts, Steve Scafidi and Kristen Bride.
We are in place. Now, this is a first of sorts because Bill and Joe have been here forever, but Kristen Bride is now a part of this great show.
See, all three of us have done this in different renditions. Yeah. I've been here moderating these two, and now all four of us are together.
You're bringing the sass. I like that.
I do bring the sass. They've let me out. They let me off
the leash.
I'm
just happy to have a little reinforcement, you know?
Yeah. And Joe was here yesterday. So Joe Zepecki, Bill McCosh, Republican strategist Bill is, and Joe is on the Democratic side. We have to start with the breaking news.
Breaking news.
Wisconsin Supreme Court has allowed our governor, and all governors going forward, I would assume, the power of that veto pen. He has this 400-year ability.
What do we call this particular
it's the line item veto.
But yeah. No, but like there was the Vanna White veto, and then there's different nicknames for these things. And if anybody knows what it should be called, it's Bill McCosh.
Maybe by the end of the show, or maybe our friend Brian Fraley will text in what it should be called.
Oh, he'll have a pretty good opinion.
Because it's
on that,
futuristic veto, right?
Well, the official name is the Evers Partial State Budget Veto, right?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. So let's have a clever name if you have one. 855-616-1620. The Siding Unlimited WTMJ Talk and Text Line.
Maybe Bill. It's the Jetsons veto, right? We were just talking about the Jetsons because it's all about the future.
Yeah, we were talking about the Jetsons and the Flintstones in sort of a weird way that we're not going to get to on this show. A very male-dominated conversation, I will say. All right. Your response to what the Wisconsin Supreme Court in a split vote, obviously,
4-3 decision, not totally unexpected, but the precedent is breathtaking because now future governors, not just Tony Evers, but let's say Josh Shulman or the next Republican governor will be able to do the same thing. And I don't think that's what our framers intended. But here's the reality of that veto. School aids are now going to be increased by, it's either $315 or $325 per student per year for 400 years. That means that's probably all students are going to get on the high end. Republicans will see no need to go beyond what's required by the law, number one. Number two, you've now created a situation where if the state's in a deficit, which could happen, Minnesota is, we know that, where you can't cut that. It's guaranteed. I think the precedent that was set by this court today is going to – they will regret it at some point in time, much like Harry Reid regretted going away from the filibuster as it related to Supreme Court nominees.
I want to give some more time to Bill because you've told this story before about how many words Tommy Thompson changed to build that highway.
Highway 151.
So how many paragraphs did it take to
it
get that
like
done?
It was like 300 pages.
Okay, so you're good with striking out letters to create new words, but not numbers to create new numbers.
Well, and maybe the same thing will happen. At the end of the day, the public said, that's probably a bridge too far. So there was a constitutional amendment to rein in what was then called the Vanna White veto. And this may create a situation where the Republican legislature passes a constitutional amendment. They have to do it through two successive legislative sessions, so they'd have to maintain the majority to rein in that veto. That's the only remedy to this.
And so I just think we should like consider that perspective. You'd say 400 years from now, it's not going to move. Have you seen what's happened to prices in the last 400 years? Like $325 or $315 100 years from now is not going to go as far as it does today. That's how things work. And so is this the way you would design the system if you were starting anew tomorrow? Probably not, but it's within bounds. And the Wisconsin governor has long been known as having the most powerful veto pen in the country.
Correct.
I don't think anybody needs to like tear their hair out over this.
Are we the only state that has that like letter by or like just
this
word
extensive.
By word?
Yeah, yeah. The partial veto. Yeah.
When you look at this thing, I was reading some of the comments of some of the liberal justices. Even they express skepticism at the sort of power. But one of the things they're all hanging their hat on for this justification of this power is we sort of have a hodgepodge of how this was done over the years. And you can't just fix it with one ruling on this issue. And that's sort of the problem here.
This stuff is complicated. And it's okay that it's complicated. We all can wish it were simpler. But again, nobody needs to set their hair on fire over this.
Okay, so then going into, because we know that there was a pause as far as moving forward with a budget with the Joint Finance Committee until this ruling came out. How does this impact the budget?
I still think that the Republicans will pass a budget before July 4th, which is common. The fiscal year ends June 30. Just for the listeners who don't know, we have a continuing budget. So we just operate on last year's spending levels. We don't shut down the government. I still think Republicans will have their budget done by the end of June. And the governor has generally gotten his vetoes done by the middle of July. And I think that will continue to be the case. The difference in this particular budget, Kristen, I think, is there's, unless there are some grand bargains between Evers and the Republicans, there will be very little in this budget. They will do the bare minimum that they have to do to keep the government functioning, to protect themselves from vetoes.
Even with all the federal cuts that are happening, you don't think there's any pressure to fund more programs that are going to fall by the wayside?
Well, that's what I was going to say. That's the last big remaining wild card. So, for example, if Republicans move forward with their plan to cut $880 billion out of Medicaid, if that gets done before June 30th, that does impact the state budget because two out of every three state Medicaid dollars expenses are federal dollars.
Interesting comments from Justice Hagedorn. We allow governors to unilaterally create law that has not been proposed to them at all. It is a mess of this court's making, and our body of cases is inconsistent, which I think is what some of the other justices said as well. All right, we're just getting warmed up on this Friday. Bill McCosh and Joseph Pecky, Kristen Brey, yours truly. Point taken. PT is, I'm going to refer.
Call PT.
Yeah, I'm going to call PT from now on.
Not to be confused with
this. Let me know on your text line if you're okay with me shortening it to PT, because I am. And I hope you are as well. Lots of stuff to talk about, including leadership, not just the governor, who is leading the parties in the state of Wisconsin. Vested interest, pointing to my pal to the left in the studio. All coming up next on 620 WTMJ.
All right. A cold day dedicated to us? No, it's dedicated to you, the WTMJ listener. Come celebrate WTMJ Day with us, your favorite WTMJ hosts. We're going to be having a private tailgate at the Brewers game Saturday, May 17th. Enjoy food, drinks, and hanging out with us. Plus tickets to the Brewers game as they take on the Twins at AmFam Field. Get more information and secure your tickets at WTMJday.com. Tickets will go fast, so sign up today. We will see you at the ballpark for WTMJ Day, Saturday, May 18th. Sponsored by Woodman's.
This is going to be a good one because I've already seen the buzz on this thing. So it's a chance to sort of let the hair down with the fans and the listeners. And we're at a tailgate, and you know what that means. Obviously, beer is going to be consumed. I've been told.
No, in Wisconsin?
I've been told that I'm a little unplugged when I've had a few beers, so I won't guarantee I'll have two.
Are you plugged now?
I'm plugged in right now. Yeah.
Plugged-ish?
Yeah. Bill McCosh and Joseph Pecky, our regular Friday guest, Kristen Brey alongside on the point taken, PT as I like to call it. All right. You made the big announcement yesterday. Joe Sopecki, running for the chair of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin, spent some time with you. So how are you feeling day two?
great first day. Picked up some additional support from electeds and county party chairs in different parts of the state. All four candidates were together last night at the Rock County Democratic Party meeting.
Did y'all get along?
It was a great turn. Oh, yes. We all do get along.
Oh, like, good.
We are four people who are serious about this, serious about keeping the party together. And we have all different perspectives that we bring. And so it's going to be a good race. And we're all committed to making sure the party emerges from this united, which is not what the Republicans are. What's going on, man?
Yeah, well, could I endorse you with that? Does that help you or
hurt you? Are you trying to hurt me or help me?
Yeah, yeah. I don't think that's going to work. But nice thought.
Well, I appreciate the sentiment.
Our party is a little embroiled in inside baseball right now. And
Brian Schimming
is our...
How long has he had that job?
3 years.
3 years. That's a long time.
Yeah.
How long is the term supposed to be for?
They're two at a time.
They're two at a time. Correct. So this is the second term.
Our process is very different than Democrats. Our executive director is chosen by the executive committee.
Smoke-filled back
our
room?
Our chairman is
not,
chosen
not by, the, not the it, art
it
of
is
democracy?
A smoke-filled back room, no question about it. By
who are these people that we...
These are folks that are elected from different parts of the state from the district leadership. So, and then there's a few at-large and other kinds of things. So there's 29 voting members. So this whole democracy thing of, you know, the whole convention voting on this, not going to happen. This will be done in a smoke-filled back room. I'm told by at least one member of the executive committee this week that they think they have the votes to make a replacement of Brian Schimming in May. We'll see. You know, until the votes are counted, you'll never know. And I would just caution, be careful what you wish for, right? You need to have a plan if you're going to replace somebody. You know, who's that going to be and what is their function going to be? What's missing from the current party? Listen, our party is in disarray would be the best way to put it at the state level. We now have offshored, I think would be the best way to put it, all of the grassroots. It's very little is done by our party anymore. It's done by whether it's Americans for Prosperity or Turning Point or America PAC, which is Musk. And you know, so the party has no control over any of that. So the question really for us is, what does our chairman even do? Well, the answer for Democrats, I would say, is raise money like Ben Wickler did. And we haven't been very good at that. So there's going to be a lot of soul searching at the convention in Wausau. Ours is in the middle of May, so it's going to come up soon. Sure. Can Schimming survive it? You know, possibly.
Who's the Republican voice in the Journal Sentinel story that said this is another example of the GOP going full USSR? I don't know who that is.
I don't either.
Okay. I'll find it. Well, maybe we'll come back.
Yeah, find it.
Have you talked to Schimming?
I did. I was actually at a breakfast.
How is he feeling about stuff?
Well, I think he's sort of used to it. I mean, he's been under attack now for some time.
Including by you.
Well,
for fundraising.
On the fundraising, I think there's good cause to be pretty – I think that's the number one job of the chairman of the party. Job may disagree. Being a spokesman is one thing, but I don't think that's the main function of the party anymore. It's to raise money. And what Democrats have done phenomenally well, much more so than Republicans, is they've used what we refer to as the Walker loophole, a 2015 change in state law that allows unlimited sums of cash to run through the state party and then be transferred directly to a candidate. We haven't used that loophole anywhere near as well as Democrats.
So my question is that because your biggest donors, the Ulines of the world, are more likely to be donating to PACs versus the party?
They're doing their own thing.
Yeah.
In your mind, that's a bad thing?
It's not as efficient.
It's not as efficient because candidates can buy ads at a substantially lower rate than third parties can. So a candidate would pay 33 cents on the dollar for what a super PAC would pay a dollar to buy. So we're getting, you get three times as many ads. All you had to do is look at the number of ads Susan Crawford had versus Brad Schimmel. And it was extraordinary. I mean, on the Madison TV market, she was on two out of every three ads were Susan Crawford ads. It was overwhelming.
So Joe Giganti?
Giganti. Yeah, he's regular Joe from the Green Bay.
Regular Joe up Radio in guy. That area has been referring to Brian Schimming as
Pontius Pilate.
Yeah. And said, you know, if you speak against the party, you shall be punished. They went full USSR. The concept is they're trying to essentially put a gag order on county party leaders. That's the quote from regular Joe.
I think Joe. I don't agree with that part of it. I've been on this show defending Robin Voss time and again. And frankly, I think we would be in the minority as Republicans if it weren't for Robin Voss. There are a lot of folks at the grassroots level that don't understand the importance he plays in the entire ecosystem for Republicans. So I'm okay with some of those new rules.
And both parties have had successes. Obviously, Republicans won the presidential election. Mm-hmm. Democrats won the two races recently. So there's opportunity for gains on both sides. Bill McCosh, Joseph Pecky, Kristen, and Steve. PT Friday. More after this.
All right. Welcome back to Point Taken. I am Kristen Bry, Steve Scafidi. It's Friday, so people were asking all week. Once the announcement got made, I got to let you guys know that the announcement was made on Monday. Yeah. New show was Wednesday. Lots of texts to make sure that Bill and Joe were still going to be here on Fridays. So you should be flattered.
After I hemmed and hawed for a bit, I said, oh, okay. Well, all right, so I got a great question. Of course, when I want that question, it disappears from my screen.
Because we got so many texts. I got it. All right.
You got it? Okay.
This is Joe for you.
Yeah.
But Bill, you can weigh in. So with tomorrow being the 250th anniversary of the first battle of the American Revolution, might we be close to needing another, quote, rebellion, independence from another unjust king?
Not a violent one. Okay. We the people can turn out a wannabe totalitarian, which is the way that President Trump is conducting himself, and we're going to do it at the ballot box. In 2026, we're going to flip Congress and put a check on this ridiculous number of emergency orders and defying courts, which we'll talk about later. We are capable of doing this. We are going to do it. There are laws of political gravity that still apply. And we may need a third founding, right? The second founding of this country after the Civil War was when the violence was done. We may need a third founding.
Independence Day.
And we can get there without violence. Political violence is wrong, whether it's January 6th, whether it's the attack on Governor Shapiro's residents in Pennsylvania. That is not who we are. That is not the way. Full stop.
We agree on two parts of that. I will say we had a reckoning on November 5th. I think regular people rose up and said enough's enough and put Donald Trump in with the second highest vote total in history, the highest in Wisconsin. I think regular people said, that's it. We've had enough. But I agree with Joe. These always should be settled at the ballot box, whether it's a fall election or a spring election. I also agree there's never a place for violence as it relates to political differences, whether it's right on left, left on right, right on right, left on left. It makes no sense.
So as far as people who, even though the midterms will come very fast, for people who think about that and think it's a year and a half away, who want to be involved and who want to hold our elected officials accountable, what suggestions do you have for them? And this could be on both sides, right?
Get engaged. Get involved. There are things you can do right now. You can join a neighborhood action team. You can join your county Democratic Party. You can call members of Congress. We still have a role to play in all this. We only need five Republicans in the House to stand up and say, enough. You don't get to declare an emergency just because you woke up grumpy, President Trump. And I saw a thing this morning. In 88 days, he has declared more emergencies and seized more emergency power than any president in American history. We get to say stop.
Real quick before the break, on that subject, executive orders and actions, do you see a role for Congress? They're going to let Trump do whatever he wants to do with these things and then say, you know what? Just to protect the future, and that could include if you're a Republican, a Democratic president, we're going to not allow presidents to have that kind of
I predicted Trump's power. Approval would be in the 30s by Easter. I got 48 hours left.
It's not going
to
happen.
He was down to 42 in one poll I saw recently. The lower he goes, the less popular he becomes, the more likely it is that MAGA Republicans in Congress grow a dang spine and actually reassert their constitutional authority.
Do your damn job.
Seriously.
Yeah. One of you recommended the book, Not the End of the World. Who was that?
That was me.
Lots of nice comments about that. Listener picked it up at the library. If things were explained in the manner that's done in the book, maybe we could have more meeting in the middle. That's a good message.
It's a great book. Check it out. Not the End of the World. Hannah Ritchie.
Also, the book that you recommended gave to me, The Siren's Call
by Chris Hayes.
First of all, impressed like crazy with Chris Hayes. It's scholarly, but it taps into all the stuff that we're talking about on this show, and people are always talking about social media, obviously, the attention. The
attention economy. That's the way we live now.
Brilliant stuff.
And everybody who wants to be smarter about how to communicate should read that book.
How are you going to find so much time to read if you've won this right? new position?
I think it's good. I'm going to finally.
I have not cracked Nexus yet, the big book that you gave me.
The answer is I'm going to finally have to break the seal and do book on audio in the car because I'm going to be on the car a lot. I've tended to do podcasts rather than books, but I can try new things.
All right. Well, when we come back, I feel like the. Continues to be the biggest story. Senator Van Hollen saw Abrego Garcia yesterday. There's still an unknown of what's going to happen with the courts and how the Trump administration is going to facilitate a return or not. So we will get to all of that with Bill, Joe, Steve, and Kristen on Point Taken. Welcome back to Point Taken. Are we still going to call it the Political Power Hour, even though they're staying until 11:30?
The political hour and
political
a half.
90?
Political
90?
Yeah,
bonus.
Indeed. Time. Joe and Bill are here. If you have questions for Joe or Bill or any of us, 855-616-1620, the Citing Unlimited WTMJ talk and text line, because they will indeed be here until usually we'll be getting ready for a grab bag and Love and Rogers, right? But we have a full half hour.
Plenty of time.
And so let's start with what I think is the biggest story is the fact that Senator Van Hollen went down to El Salvador, and was it 2 days ago when he said he was denied from seeing Kilmer Abrego Garcia? And that was the first time that I kind of all of a sudden had my senses go up of like, oh, is this guy still alive? I texted Steve that because I was the fact that just the way it was handled, I was like, oh, what if he's not even alive anymore? Then yesterday he did get to sit down with him. It was interesting that the difference in appearance from the photos we have seen from CCOT versus they cleaned him up. He looked like Turtle from Entourage. It was a little strange to see how he was dressed and no security or anything and what that looked like. I was trying to look up because there was just one tweet from Van Hollen saying, I've seen him. I've talked to his wife. I'll have more. But I want to know what they talked about. Is this a photo op? Is this proof of life? What do you make as far as denying the senator from seeing him and then allowing him to
see him? So this is only the biggest story in the country right now because the markets are closed for Good Friday. The economic disaster that Donald Trump has wreaked on this country is still the most important thing for everyday Americans. And what Senator Chris Van Hollen has done should be commended. He has demonstrated that the beta nature of how the Trump administration is pretending to do this is ridiculous. If a United States senator wants to see somebody, they get to. If the president of the United States says to the president of El Salvador, we want our guy back, it happens. This ridiculous, like, well, it's up to El Salvador. No, it's not. We're the United States of America. He was deported, renditioned, basically, mistakenly. And if Donald Trump says, give us our guy back, give us our apprentice union member who has had a do not deport order, then we get him back. When the attorney general says, well, we'll send a plane, but it's up to El Salvador. BS. We're the United States of America. Good for Van Hollen. Like, sorry, I'm getting fired up.
Joe's coachable. He took the points I gave him this week. The economy is the number one issue. Most people are not paying attention to this. I wish guys like Chris Van Hollen and others, even from my party, were on their way to Gaza to meet with those hostages who have been there for 18 months. And the U.S. has done very little. They've gotten a few out, a handful.
Both Biden and Trump got people out.
Yeah, but there's still over 100. And that's, I mean, that's really a tragedy that we should be focused on. On this particular case, I think the Trump administration could have done a better job of defining who this guy was.
They've admitted they made a mistake.
From the jump. No.
I think we do not agree on this. Let's do it.
We do not agree on
this. Press reports yesterday said they admitted they made a mistake. You're disagreeing with that.
I am disagreeing with that. Okay. Some bureaucrats said that there was faulty paperwork related to
a
this
sworn
guy.
Officer of the court in court. Everyone else who's not in court and doesn't have
whose
to follow
client
those rules.
Is the federal government, and the federal government disagrees with that. His client is the president. It is the Department of Justice, and they disagree with that.
All right, the Trump administration.
Pam Bondi and Donald Trump have not said this was done by mistake.
Focus on this case.
It was quite intentional.
From your point of view.
From my point of view, this guy, he was in the United States illegally. He had a deportation order going back to 2019. He was actually pulled over in the state of Tennessee in 2022, and Biden's FBI decided not to charge him at that time. They suspected he was trafficking 7 people from Texas. But the FBI decided at that time, we're going to let this guy go.
And a court said, do not deport. It was in court, and the court said, there's a do not deport order.
Bring it. I love that. So what is that? Why does he have that do not deport order?
I don't know,
let me tell you why. The answer is because he was under threat from rival gangs in El Salvador, which says on its face that he is a gang affiliated member at minimum and likely a gang member.
Because gangs want to kill their own guys and target their own guys, right? Like.
No.
Being targeted by a gang doesn't mean you're in a gang.
It's a fine point, though. You're saying gang. Accusations, not things he's been convicted.
Oh, no. Two courts have said he's affiliated with MS-13. ISIS said that. The president of El Salvador has said he's a gang member. So don't take my word for it. Take his. He was just in the United States.
Then prove it. Nowhere in the 250 years since the first battle of the Revolutionary War has the American ethos been guilty and renditionable until proven innocent.
Are we wrapping up?
Let's go to break because there's a bigger.
We were just going to keep talking about this.
Yeah, we're going to stay on. There's a bigger question here about how this is unfolding and whether this is the way that we want to do business in a country that has a thing called due process. We'll get to that. Bill and Joe, Kristen and Steve, Friday edition, Point Taken, 620 WTMJ. Steve and Kristen on Point Taken. Thanks for all the great text. The text line is churning, as I like to say. But here's the overarching thing I want to ask you guys about. And Bill, you go first. We have a thing called due process. And the way this is being handled is sort of similar in ways that I tried to make this point yesterday, how we're seeing like the Doe stuff. It's sort of high-level stuff, but you're not really doing the homework that sort of guarantees that what you're saying and what you're, in the case of Doe, just saving is actually true. There's a due process clause in this country or a right. It's not being followed. And you have to have these things right if you're going to go after this strategy, which is taking dangerous people out of this country who shouldn't be here. Talk about that at the high level.
So at the high level, I would say I think a breaker switch was thrown by voters on November 5th. They had seen the Biden administration let 10 million or more immigrants come into this country, many with illegal criminal backgrounds. I don't know how many, but some percentage with criminal backgrounds. And there was no vetting. And voters said, enough's enough. We are closing our borders. That is the number one reason Donald Trump won. He won all seven swing states, including the state of Wisconsin. So the notion of due process is sort of, I don't buy it. I think this guy was given due process. Previous courts actually said he should be deported. Now all of a sudden he's not some dad from Maryland. More has come out about this guy and his domestic violence, charge against him and other things. But I'm not talking about this around my kitchen table. And my guess is very few of your listeners are talking about this around their kitchen table. They're talking about the Easter egg hunt or where we're going for brunch on Sunday or how are the Brewers doing? Are they still in first place? Can the Bucks get out of first round? Those are the things they're talking about. They're not talking about Abrego Garcia. And so for Democrats, I think they are missing a massive opportunity. Trump has some weakness on the economy. I'm here to admit that. If they were focused on that, they may be able to bring his numbers down lower than they are.
Are Democrats focused on the wrong thing?
Our Congress has taken forever to get to the bill that they, the big, beautiful bill.
Yeah.
And that's hurting Trump. So if Democrats were smart, in my opinion, I want them to keep this story going till next November. I think it works for us. I think it works against them.
Obviously, America has only ever been able to do one thing at a time. And since Ronald Reagan was president, parties in Congress and presidents of both parties have failed to enact an immigration policy that makes sense. There is enough fail to go around here. The reason Donald Trump won, and you say it's immigration, is because he has more effectively demagogued and demonized people coming to this country in pursuit of a better life because of our economic strength, because of things like due process, and that when the head of the government says, that person, take them off the street and throw them in a gulag. They don't want to live like that, so they come here. When we go this path, we are losing what makes America actually a great country. And we are getting spirited. What Bill and I both do every time we do this is we don't assume bad intentions on the part of the other. We can think we're both wrong.
Yeah.
Right? But part of what we need to do here, much more broadly, is stop assuming ill and evil intent from everyone. Just because someone is here looking for a better life doesn't make them a criminal. It doesn't. And we've got to like come at it that way.
Will this get resolved? This Garcia case, taking it back to the
whether
micro
it's this
level.
One or it's the gay hairdresser, like this is complicated.
Will it and get resolved?
And listen, and I will say, and there are people that were deported who have committed violent, heinous crimes in America, and I don't care. Right? Like they went through a process. It was adjudicated. Courts said these people are violent criminals. And by the way, those folks were already in American prisons. I think America is strong enough to like actually house our own criminals. But if you want to deport, like send
them
to a gulag.
All those people that they're private like, okay. prisons, they're missing out on that
right.
revenue.
It's like a lot of these people, they didn't even take off the street. The worst offenders were already incarcerated.
I'm not sure. If it gets resolved, if he comes back, for example, if we facilitate, and I used air quotes on that, his return, the Trump administration has already said he's going to get a hearing and he's going right back to El Salvador or some other country.
Then prove it in court. That's how it should work.
Here's I have time for a question?
Go real quick.
Well, maybe we'll tease it and we'll come back. Do you think this is all a strategy to stress test the courts and finding the weak spot as far as the U.S. Supreme Court does not have jurisdiction over foreign entities? And so in figuring out that we can offshore criminals, we can start doing other things in other countries and they can wipe their hands of it and use that as a pressure point. Think about that. Maybe we'll answer it on the way back. All right. We'll be back in a minute. Point taken with Kristen and Steve. It's Friday, so Bill and Joe are here. And I posed this question as far as, is there a chance that the administration is stress testing the court system, and by finding this loophole in this case specifically, that the U.S. Supreme Court has no jurisdiction over foreign governments, is this the beginning of other tactics as far as what can happen with pressure overseas?
I want to model what I just talked about. I don't think it is healthy for our politics to jump to the worst possible intent because the answer is we don't know. We certainly hope not, right? The problem at the moment is that this administration has probably overstepped the bounds of law by and certainly like common decency by like grabbing people who think they're going to appointments to apply for citizenship, by taking college students who have drafted op-eds that are critical and they're going to get them and saying, we're revoking your visa. Like that's a problem. All of that needs to be adjudicated. And I feel very badly for all of the people who love those folks and for those folks who thought they were playing by the rules and trying to do the right thing. But I am not prepared to sit here and accuse the Trump administration of something it has not yet done. That is the way that we can actually get to a place where it's like, what's the ultimate thing here? Fix the damn immigration system. We want to be a place where people want to come and get a better life. And we can do that while having a more secure border so we know who's here. But Republicans and Democrats have a job to do to solve that together.
But they don't want to do that, and they haven't done it for decades.
The American people need to demand it. Then if they voted for Donald Trump and Republicans in Congress because of immigration, then vote them out in 2 years if they don't get the job done.
Look, as someone who didn't vote for Donald Trump, he's winning this battle on this question because the border is secure.
Right.
You have allowed him to win, I'm saying Congress, because you have not done anything on this issue. The border does not have a ton of people coming here illegally. That is a win for the president, who, by the way, said that every day on his campaign.
And that's not the whole issue. And we need to be a country that welcomes immigrants.
Absolutely.
The U.S. birth rate is declining. We want to be a big, strong, powerful economic nation. We need to grow our population.
My relatives would tell me and us that there was a process. You didn't just come into the country.
So then they were also revoking student visas for people who are here legally on a visa and doing it legal. And so what is the decline going to be of students who want to come here and actually study?
Beyond the tariff war, what the Trump administration is doing to one of our greatest economic exports, which is an education, and where we bring in the smartest people from around the world. When you look at all these big, massive corporations that were founded by immigrants, we want these folks. And so that, to me, is a policy choice this administration is making. I think that is harmful to the U.S. economy, that impacts us all. But the broader piece of it is fix the immigration system, including more student visas, so we can get the best and brightest from around the world. We want that here.
Quick question before the break, because we got to get the break for the top of the hour news.
Sorry for filibustering.
Is Project 2025 being implemented by this administration?
I don't know what that is. I never knew what that was.
It's a plan for the future of this country.
I know in theory what it is. But
you never read it?
No. I'm going to answer Kristen's question directly. Yes, they are stress testing the Supreme Court. They're pushing the boundaries, not just on this, but as on presidential powers, for sure. And they've gotten some answers. There are more answers yet to be answered. We'll see how this all shakes out. On the immigration thing, we'll get to that in the next segment.
We're going to do tariffs.
We're going to do tariffs, too.
Right. We have
overtime on the
I know. We have you guys until 11:30.
OT.
Kristen, Bill, Joe, Steve. And we're all a little animated today, which is a good thing. There's a lot to be passionate about in this country, and certainly politics is part of that story.
Broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, it's time for Point Taken. Here are your hosts, Steve Scafidi and Kristen Braun.
Oh, happy Friday, everybody. Yes, Kristen is alongside.
Happy Good Friday.
Yeah. It is Good Friday. Happy Holy Week, everyone.
Yeah, and I want to say this because this is the first one where all four of us have been assembled together. Kristen's done this before. I certainly have done a couple years worth with you guys. And I appreciate this ability to take on these and sometimes really serious questions about how this country is run and our president and the role of our state government and our courts. This is a important part of my week. Not that every day is not important, but this is sort of like a great way to sum up the things that we've talked about. Bill McCosh and Joe Zepecki, Kristen Braun, Steve Scafidi on the Friday edition. It's still sort of the political power hour, even though it's an expanded
political power hour and a half.
Yeah, today
it rolls off the tongue.
So this is another big one because those of us who have been looking at our 401k, which I did for the first time in about 2 weeks.
Bad move. Bad idea.
Man, it's like what I lost was more than I paid for my house at when I bought it like all those years ago. So not good, but it's just paper money, as they like to tell us, our financial planners. All right, so we have this sort of conflict between the Fed, Jerome Powell, the president, on tariffs and interest rates. And the president, I think basically, Donald Trump, and you can disagree, Bill, if you want, he wants the power to do whatever he wants when it comes to the economy and how he sets the table as far as what this country does, how we operate. Well, Jerome Powell thinks differently. I agree with Jerome Powell. I think we need to let that be a separate entity and make the rules given a broader base of knowledge about how economies work. How do you see this friction between the Fed and the Oval Office?
So I want the Fed to remain independent. I think that's very important. I want them to focus on the macro issues and make sure that they're timely. And I think that's where Trump has the biggest issue with them. He would like them to lower the interest rates, which are at 20-year highs. It doesn't appear that they're in any mood to do that right now. And in some cases, Jerome Powell personally has attacked the tariffs and talked about how they're going to be inflationary and things like that. That may or may not be true. We'll see over a period of time. I wouldn't mind seeing the interest rates come down. I will repeat what I said a couple weeks ago when this all started. What Trump is doing is so monumental. It's like remodeling your entire house while the family's still living there. There's going to be a lot of disruption. And I don't know how much time he's going to get from the public to complete that remodeling job. And he's certainly not going to get any help from his bank, which is Jerome Powell. So I think they need to get some of these trade deals, some of the bigger ones. They call them the Big 15. They got to get those done by the end of May, in my opinion.
The clock is ticking on this stuff.
No question.
Joe?
Careful about signing your name to an op-ed that says what you just said. They might turn on you. No, listen, the Fed needs to remain independent. Mm-hmm. There are checks and balances, not just outlined in the Constitution, but that sort of govern the way that government and business and the economy all work together. And the vagaries of our politics and Congress can change every 2 years. Like, that is important. Yeah. And it is important that there are people who take a longer view. The independence of the Fed and its role is why, since World War II, the U.S. economy has been the strongest, safest bet in the world. It's why we're the reserve currency. It's why people want to buy things from Americans. It's why they want to sell things to Americans. And I am not here to suggest that all is perfect in the American economy. But the Trump administration inherited the strongest economy in the world, in need of some reimagining, so that the, you know, class divides shrink and that working people can get ahead. And that's a whole separate conversation. But the risk that this administration is running is that America is no longer viewed as a safe bet. When you go to war, economic or otherwise, with your geographic trading partners like Canada and Mexico, even though Trump himself renegotiated the trade deals when he was president the last time, when Europe can't trust you, like, there are short and even scarier, from my perspective, long-term economic risks that this administration has now made a reality for everyone, rich or poor, in this country. And firing the Fed, you know, pushing that, picking that fight, is only going to escalate those risks further. And I wish more Republicans would say that. And I appreciate Bill saying it. But, like, how about we have 10 U.S. senators who are Republicans come out and say it? How about 25 House Republicans come out and say it? Like, that shouldn't be that hard to do.
All right. Well, with that, we're looking at the clock. We're going to come back and do Love. This is my first Love and Rogers. I don't think I've done Love and Rogers.
First of all, it's Rogers Love.
It's Rogers Love? See?
Right. Chronological, I would think. Yes.
Oh, all right.
So you've done Junk Truck with us in the past.
Yeah, yeah, I was Junk Truck before.
Similar
yeah.
stuff.
Since it's been rebranded. All right. Stay with us on WTMJ. All right, I've been told that I need to bring it back so I can correct myself. It's now time for Rogers Love.
Yes.
On Point Taken. All right, Joe Zepecki, what do you want to get rid of this week?
So I don't want to get rid of it, but apparently the Trump administration is ready to move on from peace talks between Ukraine and Russia. Secretary of State Rubio saying if there's no progress within days, probably at a point where he's going to say, well, we're done. Putin is slow walking the ceasefire talks. I was promised, the American people were promised, in fact, that Donald Trump would have this solved within 24 hours. And now, not even 100 days in, he's ready to give up on it. So I'm moving on from the BS that he spewed that he could do it in 24 hours. And apparently the Trump administration is ready to move on from actually solving this problem.
You mentioned Trump a lot as someone who's running for chair of the Democratic Party.
Oh, come
on.
You think that's a coincidence?
2 weeks ago when I wasn't running for chair.
I sense a theme of your campaign.
Rogers, I am moving on from an activist Wisconsin Supreme Court who today issued an opinion that allows the governor of the state, regardless of who they may be, in this case it's Governor Tony Evers, to issue a 400-year veto, which frankly allows him to make law, which isn't the role of the executive. So I am moving on from the four activist judges. Sadly, conservatives didn't turn out on April 1st, so this is our reality for the next 3 years, and it's the beginning of many decisions that are going to go against us.
It's a love fest today as well, not just the stuff you don't like. What do we love? What do we love today?
I am loving the ways that people are reaching out and, you know, reconnecting, and, you know, running for party chair is not something I ever thought I would do. But the number of people who, you know, are in my past, people I worked with, like, people are so kind.
They really like you.
It's not even that.
They really, really like you.
It really isn't. Like, there's people who I haven't worked that closely with in a long time who are stepping up.
Stuart Smalley?
Who are stepping up and saying things like, here's what I want you to think about.
Gosh,
or here's what you're wrong about. And that's the way this should work. So I'm loving being a candidate
for
24 hours.
8 weeks?
We're going to do before and after. We're going to see how much gray hair you have after this, or how much less hair you have.
So it's an eight-week campaign.
Yes.
And you're going to be here still.
Yeah, I'm going to try. Whenever I can be, I will be here. This is an important part of my week, and I think people get a lot from it, and that's important.
Okay.
I'm loving my friend Scott Neitzel, who texted me personally. I don't know if we got any on for naming of the 400-year veto. Because it's Good Friday on Holy Week, he called it the eternal veto. Oof. I think that's a good one.
Mm.
Scott Walker had a 1,000-year one, too, right? That's the other part of this.
He did.
Yeah.
He did.
So,
yeah. Was that far?
So apparently Evers was thinking small with only 400 years. You forgot to mention that, Bill.
Well, you got to work with what's in there. You can't just write in letters. You got to work what's in the document.
I just thought of a love, because next Friday when this thing happens, I'm going to be at the draft in Green Bay working overtime. This show, Kristen's going to be...
I'll be the moderator?
Yes. Well, I'm just going to chime in a question, because basically I'm going to have my feet up somewhere sitting comfortably. And then
maybe you'll have a Bloody Mary.
Maybe. And then I'm doing a four-hour draft show on our partner station, ESPN 94.5.
Got your big board filled out?
I don't get into it that. I just love the atmosphere. I've been to the Inner Circle in Vegas for the draft. I don't think it was 4 years ago.
Yeah, we
it
saw is. You on TV.
If the feed breaks, the go-to still shot needs the screen grab of Steve.
Quick
draft.
Story. So I'm sitting at a blackjack table in Vegas, and we're talking about the draft. I think the guy was from Vegas or something. And I go, you got to see this picture. This was me at the draft. And he goes, man, you were wasted. I was like, I probably was on my way to being wasted. But it's the one and only time I think I've worn a Chiefs hat in public. Someone's cracking
a
beer.
Was that a sound effect? Or somebody cracking a beer. Crack a beer.
We got a couple producers cracking beers in there. All right. That's Roger's Love. After the break, we'll save some time here for grab bag. Those are always fun to do. And do you have a grab bag today, Kristen?
I'm going to think of one.
All right. You're listening, of course, to Point Taken PT, as I like to call it, on this Friday edition right here on 620 WTMJ. Great music on this Friday from producer Brandon.
Maybe not our goodbye song. We're trying to find a goodbye song for the
show. I actually like this one.
Like
Werewolves
this one
of London.
Yeah, because I was born right outside of London. Do you know that story?
I do know that.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. My dad was in the Air Force. My mom was Scottish, lived in Oxford when she was a child. But that's not what we're doing here. We're grab baggers, which is sort of the way we wrap this. Now, we have an expanded edition today, and maybe next Friday, we'll see. So this is our kind of opportunity to sort of hit on something maybe we missed or highlight something We've had unbelievable, powerful ones that were sad. Some were funny. It can be anything you want. Joe, what's your grab bag?
Playoff time. Don't bet against the Bucks.
Going with the Bucks.
Giannis is such a force. This team ended the season playing good ball. Obviously, we would rather have Lillard back ASAP, but Giannis is a force of nature. If anybody wants to bet against the Bucks, I will take that action.
All right.
Good luck, Milwaukee Bucks, in the playoffs.
He had a great season this year, by the way. Remarkable season. Look at the numbers.
He keeps improving. Impressive. Like, yeah. The guy is a force of nature. He doesn't settle and say, I'm good enough. Love that guy. Love this team. Let's go Bucks. Bucks and six.
Bucks and six.
I'm staying on sports. For the second time in less than 12 months, Wisconsin will be the center of the nation next week for the NFL draft. Last summer, we all know we had the RNC here in the great city of Milwaukee, the great state of Wisconsin. This draft is coming to the smallest market in the NFL. I think it's Mecca, Lambeau Field. And folks that are going to get to see it for the first time are going to come away with that same view. But the economic impact of this for the state. Obviously, I want the Packers to take either a lineman, an offensive lineman, or a wide receiver with that 23rd pick. And we'll get to talk about that next Friday because the first round is on Thursday night. But this coming to little old Green Bay, what it means for the Packers organization, what it means for the city of Green Bay, Brown County, and for the state of Wisconsin cannot be underestimated. This is wicked cool. Let's go Green Bay.
And I want to compliment in my grab bag Mark Murphy, outgoing president. Yeah. This is his swan song.
For sure.
He brought a Super Bowl back to Green Bay. He's certainly led this incredible financial rise of this franchise.
Yeah.
They've rebuilt the area, the Titletown area. If you have not been to Titletown, which is just north of Lambeau, it is spectacular, and it continues to redevelop itself. This is a big moment for a great city, the smallest city in the NFL. And like you just said, the economic impact is not just Green Bay. It's all of us in the States, including Milwaukee, by the way.
Will you bring us back some swag?
What would you like, Joe?
I mean,
what's
I'm
available?
Yeah.
I don't know. There's that draft day stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. And listen, and if you got to buy a t-shirt, you know, I love t-shirts. I'll buy a t-shirt. Yeah. Like, I'll reimburse for a t-shirt if you find a cool one.
I'm a season ticket holder.
You are?
Yeah.
Are they in your name?
They just got transferred. And this is my grab bag.
Okay,
sure.
Go.
My parents, because they came, what was it, a couple weeks ago when they made the announcement that the Packers were like, we're going to start taking tickets away. If you're season ticket holders and selling all of your tickets, you can't do that anymore. So I let my parents know because they're at the age right now when it's a lot more comfortable to watch the game at home, you know, because where our seats are, you have to climb a lot of stairs. And they're just, you know.
That's a polite way of saying they're getting older.
This is their words. So I had to lobby very hard. Because I am the one who lives in Wisconsin now and not my brother. Because you can't split the tickets. Even though we have four tickets, you have to give it to, you can only have them in one person's name. So as of this season, I am now officially.
Wow. Where do you sit? Where do you sit? Roughly.
Like northwest section. About
In the bowl.
In the bowl.
Like how far up? Like
on metal seats?
On metal seats, like three.
Which are the most uncomfortable seats.
You stand for most of the time anyways. Yeah. But yeah, so now we're...
Where do you fall on the stand-sit thing? Because I like people who sit down.
We're polite in my section. We sit.
Says the other old guy.
Oh, you couldn't resist getting that old guy thing
in
there.
I'm sorry.
All right, let's bring it back to politics real quick.
Oh, God, do we have to?
Do you have another grab bag you want to
get? No, I was just going to ask if people were traveling for Easter and what folks are doing. Like, we're going to see family out in Greenfield. It's going to be great. I'm looking forward to it.
Are you talking over his grab bag? Do you have a grab bag, Steve, you'd like to share?
Mine was Mark Murphy. But I'm hosting this Easter gathering for, like, the last, you know, as I have for, like, the last. Actually, my wife does all the work. I'm just there.
You entertain.
But this year, I'm building an outdoor cook station for my patio. And all the work's done. But now the granite slab has to be placed on top of this beautiful cedar thing that I built. So I have my nephews. And my two son-in-laws are going to lift this thing, and I'll put the adhesive on. I'm making them do the heavy lifting so they get to eat at our Easter gathering. What are you guys doing?
That's good formatting.
Yes. What are you guys doing?
We're going to my niece's, just a mile and a half away from our house.
You bring food, or does your niece do all the work?
She will likely do all the work, but we'll bring stuff, too.
That's nice.
Cousin
Carol, good guests.
Who I wished a happy birthday a couple weeks ago to, is like, she's the glue, going to Carol's. She handles the mains with some help from like my mom and her mom, and everybody else brings something, right? Whether it's an appetizer or a side. I think that's a good division of labor.
I like that the flowers are all coming up at this time because the daffodils are popping, tulips are
coming.
Yeah.
The advantage of a late Easter is.
Yeah, because last year was in March, which is way too early. Now, I know the faith has control over that, so we don't just get to decide. There's been a long history of that. A lot of people are saying have a safe trip to Green Bay. So next Friday,
you're not going
to
ask what I'm doing?
Oh, did you? I thought you said. See, I'm still getting used to this format in this new show. Point taken. It's with Kristen.
We're
Bryan.
Going to Chicago. We're going to the suburbs of Chicago for my sister-in-law and brother-in-law's house, and it's going to be Frankie's first Easter egg hunt
because
she was a baby
cool.
last year.
That is
so
cool.
Now she can actually run around and open up and see what her little treats are.
Does she like? She like most kids. Does she love the candy?
She is an eater.
I love
Girl
that.
Girl has not eater. Seen a piece of food that she doesn't like.
That's
good. So
that's good.
She'll be into it.
All right, real quick, wrapping politics back into this. What do you think the biggest story will be next week in politics?
Powell and the Fed v. Trump.
You think?
Okay. I think this is coming to a head real quick.
Something Supreme Court related. U.S.
Supreme,
Supreme Court. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's coming back to like tariffs and the economy.
Where do I want to go with this? I think something in the state of Wisconsin politically will happen. I'm not sure. Maybe an announcement.
It's been a little quiet. I mean, it's been, since the Supreme Court, it feels like. I mean, today's announcement was pretty big, but it's not been as saucy.
All right. So next Friday, I will be in Green Bay, but I'll be on the program. Kristen will anchor things here. I don't know how easy it's going to be, but I'll have good questions and funny comments as I always do. Because my old boss said I wasn't funny, and that still hurt my feelings. So I try to be funny as well as
every good comic is tortured.
That's true. Did you just call me a good comic?
I made a factual statement.
Well, your grandson is.
And what you should have said, and what you should have said in response. This is my show note. When somebody makes a good point, you know what you guys should say?
Point taken.
Ba-dum-ba. Wow, look at Joseph Pecky bringing it home on a Friday.
Right there. He's in on it.
All right, so we got a half hour left with Kristen and I on Point Taken, PT as I like to call it. We have a great update on local news from the outstanding, terrific, awesome Connie Weber. That's all coming up. Oh, happy Friday, everybody. Happy Easter weekend. Good Friday to all those that celebrate. It's I love family gatherings, and it's sort of one of those opportunities to sort of get together. And most
I feel like I hear a butt coming.
No, there's no butt.
Okay.
I don't think families get together. I was just at a funeral for my cousin Mike last week, and I said I hate that it's only like, you know, weddings and funerals. So this is sort of the opportunity to do the extra ones, but it shouldn't be just a holiday. We don't extended family. We don't get together enough, I think, in my world. Is that
one of the things that I have been very happy that I married into is one that my husband is very close with both of his siblings, and I am now very close with his siblings. But they're also very close with their three cousins and their siblings because they all kind of, I mean, their spouses.
I love that.
And so, we're almost all in Southeast Wisconsin, Sands, and then they're also their step siblings are here. So, like for Mike, all of his people are here, and we're all very close, and we do a pretty good job as far as dinners or organizing stuff, cabin trips together. And that's been, it's nice because I get along with all of them. It'd be less nice if we had to do this. And I was like, oh God, again. But so that's been fun. My family's a little, everyone's in the Midwest besides my brother. Everyone's a little bit more spread out. So that's more of a summer get together and Thanksgiving every year.
So no but, just enjoy the holiday and the gathering and enjoy the food certainly. But think about that familial part of that, because I think we all could be better at that. And I had a long conversation with my cousin Don Scafidi at the funeral last week. And
now that is an Italian name.
That is Italian, yes. And he's very Italian. Look, he looks like Michael
Don
Corleone.
Scafidi.
He still looks like Michael Corleone. He's only a couple years younger than me. But he said we should get together more often. And he lives up in the northern part of the state. And I think that's right. So that's what I love about the holiday. All right. I was watching CBS Sunday Morning, and they honored something that I certainly benefited from and still do. Back in 1981, I think it was last week, but this week is still relevant. Ted Benna, a guy you would never have heard of, created the 401k plan, allowing corporations to contribute tax-free to our collective retirement accounts. It also, and this is where I really want to ask you about this, it allowed companies to get out of the pension business.
Yeah, so that's why you sent it to me, and you're like, sort of a good news story.
Yeah,
and I was like,
because a lot of people have benefited from 401k.
So 1981. Yeah. Before I was born, so just a reminder that.
That's a startling reminder of how young you are.
And to me, that feels like the way people talk about pensions versus 401k now is that people miss pensions, and that pensions were actually more stable and more reliable as far as
and they're not coming back.
And they're not coming back. And so I am not like totally aware of why that is. I mean, I'm assuming you had a pension at one point for one of the companies you worked for.
Little tidbit about me. I have a half pension from the career I spent 28 years in,
yeah,
which is television. So, yes.
So, does that continue to grow even since you've left? Or is it just money that's sitting there for you? Like, what is, like, when
it's
you look at your 401k versus
there,
your pension?
Because I'm not contributing to it anymore.
Growth. How does it, like, how do they how do they actually functionally exist differently?
Companies basically took the money that they're now putting into their employees' 401ks. Not every company does it the same way either. They had pensions to sort of keep their
People there,
yeah,
right?
Keep them their life stable, right? And it was obviously things were cheaper and healthcare was more affordable and all these things. And there was sort of a rigid structure to everything, right? You knew if you got sick, you went to the hospital and it was paid for. You knew if you needed help in your life after you retired, your company would be there for you. Well, that dynamic changed. Companies used to be employee first. Companies are shareholder first, mm-hmm, now. That reality. And we're actually going to bring this up with Dave Spano, who's going to join us at 11:15 on Monday. And that's going to be a regular thing, by the way. So if you're a fan of Dave Spano, I am. And certainly Annex Wealth Management. We're in the Annex Wealth Management studios here. I just thought this was an interesting story because what are we talking about in terms of politics?
Is everyone's 401k.
Yes. And I think this is one of those big questions that we have to ask ourselves. Is this how we continue to do this? And as I've talked about this with other people, especially financial planners. I ran into a ton of them. Big surprise, a ton of financial planners playing blackjack in Vegas, which I thought was interesting. Fascinating conversation.
The numbers, guys. Why is that surprising?
Like, I don't know. It surprised me. I was expecting more blue collar, but that's not the case. And they were all
blue
saying
collars at the slots. That's my assumption.
Yeah, maybe. They were all saying the same thing. There's so much uncertainty out there that we don't know how this is going
to
play out.
I literally had a call with my financial advisor yesterday, and he goes, I had to go. I had to sign something so he could move some stuff around. And I was going to bring this up, and then we had to go to break. But he's like, I want to put you in some European EFTs, and just because there's stuff over there that's doing a lot better and is a little bit more stable than some of our stuff over here.
Yes,
and so,
but
we're talking about the difference between IRA and 401k and all of the different stuff as far as what we should be doing for financial planning.
And if you heard Bill talking about the clock is ticking on whether these tariffs are actually going to do what Donald Trump wants them to do or his administration, or whether they continue to have a really harsh impact on those of us in our population who are at or near retirement or in retirement. I think that is sort of a big question that we certainly are going to be talking a lot more about. So you can hear from Bill a little bit of a Republican conservative position. It's like, man, this is starting to come back at us, and whether the president can actually win this argument. I think he's way out over his skis.
I think we'll be interested to see what Dave says on Monday.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, after the break, we're encouraging you to phone call our show.
Because this has been the biggest feedback. Since I've gotten back to WTMJ a year ago, I think a lot of people missed their opportunity to engage with us and call into the show. And so we're certainly, with this new format and 2 hours, we're going to try to find more time to hear from you. So do we have a specific question we want them to ask?
Most of the people who are listening right now probably heard most of the conversation with Bill and Joe. What did we miss in that conversation? What topic in politics did we miss?
Or what point should one of us made?
Yes. Should we have challenged Bill and or Joe? And we welcome those calls, 855-616-1620. Point taken, PT, Friday edition, Chris and Steve. More after this. We asked for your calls. Point taken with Chris and Bry, Steve Scafidi here on this Friday edition. Can you press that, or can I just bring him in? Is it Richard from Illinois?
It is.
Hey,
hi, Richard.
First caller of the new program. So welcome.
Excellent. I missed talking to you, Steve. My question is, I was kind of wishing that you could have been maybe every Friday until you get a good answer. I don't know how Bill kind of gaslighted away and danced away from your Project 2025 question so fast. Clearly he's aware of it. Clearly he knows what about it. He pulled the same crap Trump did during the debate and stuff. Never heard of it. Never my butt BS. I would say we're in the...
I asked him at break. I was like, have you really not read it? And he said, no. And that was a conscious choice on his part, that he has not read it, but it was because he didn't, for the exact reason so he could claim he doesn't know anything about it.
And I brought the question up because I think it's important, and there's been a lot of questions about whether the Trump agenda and some of the things he's doing align themselves with Project 2025. And I, just for the hell of it, I pulled up a pro-Project 2025 website, and here's just a couple things on here. Secure the border, well... President has done that. I actually agree with the president's hard fist approach on this stuff. Deport illegal aliens. This one, de-weaponize the federal government. I don't know. I think
there's a Project 2025 tracker. There's someone.
Yes.
It's project2025.observer is the website, and it's tracking 305 different statutes, and 98 are done, and 61 are in progress.
Yeah, so I mean, there's certainly some alignment there. The reason, and thanks for the call, Richard. I think that one of the things I don't like about some of this stuff is we are giving this president, and I'm the first guy to say that I'm not a Trump supporter, way too much power. We have Congress and the courts for a reason. We have separation of government. For whatever reason, Donald J. Trump doesn't believe in that. And maybe it's because he worked in his golden tower at the Trump Tower, and maybe he got to make all the calls and certainly did on the Celebrity Apprentice, and maybe he's a reality TV president, however you want to define him. He has this idea that he's the sole person that can make these critical decisions about not just the present, but the future of this company. I don't like a country. I don't like that.
But how many people around him do you think are also, and I don't mean around him, like people like the Project 2025 people, the people who want him to have, or the executive to have, that much power? And so I don't think it's just him single-handedly pushing this, right?
He's the guy that makes those calls, but there's people like Stephen Miller. You know, that's a guy who's probably even more Project 225 than Trump is.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that Donald Trump has digested the entire scope of Project 225, to be honest. And I don't think Donald Trump understands most of the complex issues facing this country, other than a superficial, shallow sense, which is probably handed him daily on a piece of paper. And I know that I'm a harsh Trump critic, but someone has to be.
I mean, I think there's a lot. I mean, I feel like you, when you, the way you say that, you're the only one who's a Trump critic out there.
I'm a regular conservative, reasonable, rational conservative. People always ask me what I am. That's what I am. I'm not a Trump conservative because I don't think that's conservatism. It's popular.
What is your definition of conservatism? I should have asked you that on Wednesday when you said you're a modern. You said you're a modern conservative.
Yes.
I actually think you're a classic conservative.
Yeah,
right?
That's people. I get that argument all the time. To me, conservatism is small government, state government, local government, and certainly federal government. The government shouldn't and can't do everything for all people. Doesn't mean we should do things in a legal fashion. Doesn't mean we should go after people based on their identity. That's something I'm feel very strongly about. But small government, the government spends way too much money. While we'd like to be kind to everyone across the world and fix all the world's problems, we can't do that and we can't afford it. The reason we have a massive deficit is because we've spent our money improperly, I think. That's my definition.
That's it. So it all just comes back to money.
Absolutely.
Because I would say on social issues, you're not that conservative.
No. But I think that's the right mix for the modern era, right? You have to be more open. And if you're so rigid that you, for example, I'm called a rhino, even though I voted for Republicans like 98% of the time.
Do you get offended when people call you a rhino?
I don't get offended by much anymore. Other than you calling me grouchy.
Because we've talked about this before on our first episode of our podcast, You Need to Listen. See, I don't like calling myself a Democrat.
Call yourself?
I don't know. Like a collectivist? I'm not sure that's a political leading.
What does that mean?
I think of when I say collectivist, I feel like my policy preferences tend to come back to what is the best for the most amount of people. Basically the inverse of being an individualist, right? As far as not letting people fall through the cracks, taking care of each other. I think when we make each other healthier, the society.
Sure.
I anti-wealth inequality, all of those things, anti-poverty. So I think that sometimes leans left, leans, and thus I vote Democrat. But as far as like aligning myself with the Democratic Party, I don't feel very strongly about that. Similar to you, I've voted mostly for Democrats. And so do you still feel confident in saying that you are a Republican, or do you feel more like the conservative title is a better title?
I don't say conservative that much anymore. I call myself a Republican because I think it matters. And I think we want to, those of us who think like I do and are not Trump, you know what, kissers, we're hanging our hat on that because I think there's a future for that. I will tell you that a lot of the side conversations I had in Las Vegas about politics, once people found out what I did, is that everybody, almost to a person, said, this two-party thing is nuts the way we do it now, and it's just a mess. And
it is a mess.
Yeah, and that's something that both parties.
We should get Catherine Gale on. She's the one who wrote the book about the duopoly.
We should put that on our list.
Put it on the list.
All right, we'll give you our final thoughts, and we're going to tease our podcast because it's a really good one. In the only way we can, because it's a sensitive material and not for kiddos. We'll do that after the break on WTMJ. Who isn't working for the week? I'm looking forward to this week, and I'm going out to dinner with my family tonight.
Where are you going? Oh, you're not going to say tonight. Yeah.
Both of my daughters are members of a country club, a golf course club, whatever, in Illinois, and they're taking their mom out for a family dinner for her birthday, which...
It's been like a two-week thing.
Yeah. Well,
long birthday month.
Well, and she's been lucky lately. Just leave it at that. She was just in Las Vegas.
Her mom looking over.
Yeah, and she's looking fantastic, by the way. I want to talk about our podcast in the last minute. So the episode 7 launched this morning.
Yesterday morning.
You Need to Listen is the podcast. And Kristen and I have a great rapport. We obviously enjoy that on the show, but this is sort of a way to sort of take it to the next level. And this one's
uninterrupted.
Yes. And also uncensored. So I will tell you right now, this one talks about OnlyFans, which is a subscription service.
I want you to describe OnlyFans for people who are unfamiliar with OnlyFans.
It's a subscription-based service, creator content that leans heavily towards sexual content, yes. Like 98%.
Content creator owned and operated. You have your channel, and people have to pay to subscribe to your channel.
Yeah, so we kind of dissected this growing platform. Here's the interesting part. 42% of all their 305 million users are from the United States. I think we talked about what that suggests. What is this? We're heavy consumers of pornography. Is one of them.
As a country?
Yeah.
Yes. But I was more interested in because there's so many people who are making so much money off of it. So you have people who have full careers doing other things and are choosing to sign up and to do this. And with that much money and that many more people partaking, will it ultimately change you know, kind of our puritanical views on sex and sex work.
Yeah, it's a good episode.
It's a good episode. It's a funny episode. And so if you want to listen to it, text LISTEN to 855-616-1620, and we will send you that link.
Our last two words, point
taken.